Welcome to another edition of You Can Farm Talks. This is a live video podcast series where we talk with people in the agriculture industry who share important, relevant information and insights for new and beginning farmers and ranchers. These are short and focused conversations that generally last about 20 to 30 minutes. First, we ask our guests to share their story in agriculture, and then we ask them to talk about one thing that they think someone getting started in agriculture needs to know. For those of you tuning into the live Zoom feed, we hope you'll submit questions in the chat window. As we get to the end, I'll pick out a question or two to ask our guest. All of these shows are recorded and posted online on our webpage, where you'll also find an online discussion forum. You can ask questions in the forum anytime, and we'll respond to additional questions there that we don't get to during the live episode. Our guest today is Cat Urbikite. Cat is a Western Wyoming livestock producer, maintaining a flock of fine-wooled Rambouillet sheep in large carnivore country. To protect their livestock from predators ranging from coyotes and mountain lions to wolves and bears, the Urbikites also raise livestock guardian dogs. Urbikite is vice president of the Wyoming Wool Growers Association and volunteers for several ag organizations in the West, including the Western Landowners Alliance and the American Sheep Industry Association. Cat is a writer of books, articles, and opinion columns that present perspectives and insights from what it's like to be a livestock producer on the ground and the producer's connection to the landscape. She's an advocate for transhumance, the seasonal movement of people with livestock that has long been practiced around the globe. Cat, I'm so glad that you're able to join us for this discussion. We always start off this conversation by giving our guests a chance to talk about their own story in agriculture. Please tell us about those first few years after you started ranching. I know that those first few years can often be stressful. Please tell us about your background, how you got to this point in your life and career, and maybe talk a little bit more about how and why you've chosen to become directly involved in agriculture, as well as encouraging and mentoring other beginning ranchers.
Hi, Keith. Thanks so much for having me on to start with. My origin story in ag in Wyoming, I think it'd probably be something that a lot of younger producers would find familiar to them. So my husband and I were both involved in ag growing up separately, of course. But when we got married, we weren't in agriculture anymore. Our family farms were gone for the most part. And so we decided that we wanted to be in agriculture together shortly after we were married. And what we did is, the land prices in Wyoming were just too high even then for us to be able to afford to, buy an ag operation. So we knew our community pretty well, the area of Sublette County, and actually realized that we had some absentee landowners that owned ag parcels that weren't being used. And so we started hitting up people trying to get ag leases to start our own ag operation. And that is actually how we got started with the land component of it was entirely with private land leasing. But at the same time, I had a full-time job in town where I was a newspaper reporter for our local community. And I spent, kind of as a cub newspaper reporter, one of my first assignments I was told was to cover grizzly bear expansion and recovery in Sublette County, because grizzly bears had been coming down. The population had expanded out of Yellowstone and Grand Teton Parks, and had really started to come down into the upper green in Sublette County. And I spent some time that summer going up into the upper green and want to write stories about grizzly bears and see what was going on with bears in that area. And I ran into a herd of sheep up there. and they were sheep owned by Bill Thoman, who ranched near Fontanelle Dam. And I ended up finding that the most fascinating aspect of the story was talking to him about his sheep and about the attacks that occurred on his sheep and how he felt about that and what they tried to do to protect the sheep. And it was I just really, really enjoyed meeting him and getting to see those beautiful sheep on the landscape. And so kind of at, I finished out the year after the sheep came down from their grazing allotments and went back to their ranches and everything. Bill ended up telling me that he thought I did a pretty good job, but that I still didn't know what it was like for him. And so the next spring, when some of his sheep had orphan lambs, Bill gave me a couple of orphan lambs that I had to bottle feed. And I set those lambs down on my lap and I bottle fed those babies and looked into those beautiful dark eyes and fell madly in love. And so it was really the kindness of that one man, getting me started with bum lambs is how I started. And then it was probably 2 years, the next year after that, I bought 50 bum lambs at one time and bottle fed them all. And that is how I got started in being a sheep producer. So, you start with, you find what you love and you make it happen.
And I know since then I'm assuming that you picked up some grazing allotments to add on to where you've had leases and grown your herd. When did you first start having that interest in the guardian dogs? That's one of the things that's fascinated me that as I've seen you through the years too.
Yeah, so shortly after I started with the 50 head of bum lambs, I had a another friend, actually someone I didn't know real well at the time, said, "That's great. You've got started with sheep, and that's really good. But you also need to protect those sheep." And so he gifted me with my first livestock guardian dog pup that I raised with those lambs. And of course, he was right. He ended up becoming a mentor to me. Anytime I had problems with, an animal health issue with the sheep or anything like that, he's the guy that I would call to find out, okay, what do I do about this? What does this sound like? What does this look like? So I can't say enough about what the importance of good mentors to young producers or to producers just getting started. But I was fascinated by watching that first pup that I have really grow up with those lambs, and what a great instinct for protection. And when you think about it, it's a really extraordinary relationship that they have, that you have these big. These dogs grow up to be really big beasts, right? But they are so gentle and protective to another species. And so they live their lives in service to another species. And there's something really compelling, I think, about that. And so we really took to using the livestock guardian dogs. And as we grew our operation, and actually started moving around to different allotments and things, we would encounter different predators. We went from coyotes, were our everyday predator, to wolves becoming our everyday predator. And so we ended up having some pretty major disasters between the with wolves, especially in our sheep, and killing livestock guard dogs and injuring our dogs. And so we actually started doing more research on, what is it that cultures around the world have used livestock guardian dogs for thousands of years and have managed to still stay operating in the ag arena and everything with their dogs in spite of the presence of these large carnivores, so what are they doing that we should be doing? You know, what are they doing differently that is making them survive? And so we ended up doing more research, and instead of going on vacations, my husband and I would take a trip to a foreign country and go be with someone else's sheep so that we could see what they were doing with their livestock guardian dogs. And then and that led us to try several different breeds of dogs. It led us to using spiked collars on our dogs to keep them safe when a wolf tries to grab them by the neck, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so that kind of evolved into its own thing, you know. And so I think that we're pretty well known for using livestock guardian dogs. Just, I think, you know, I write about them a lot because I'm fascinated by them a lot. So
mentors, and especially good mentors, are extremely helpful when you're getting started with any type of enterprise. What suggestions do you have for folks looking to identify a mentor or getting connected or finding someone willing to share good advice?
You know, I guess the thing is that I feel like a lot of people in ag recognize that they've been in your position before, right? That we all started somewhere. And I think you just have to be brave and start asking questions. Ask if, you know, if someone would help you, what do you think about this? I'm facing this, you know, give me your input. And that helps you determine the answer to that will help you determine whether that person would really be a good mentor to you. And I don't think that either one of you will go into a relationship thinking that you're building a mentor relationship. That's just kind of how it evolves. But, you know, I've been fortunate to have other livestock producers, range specialists, bankers. You know, you have different people that over time that you get to know, and you know that this is their specialty and you can rely on them for this. And you know, it's not necessarily just one person. It can be a whole group of people, each with their own specialty. You know, I have a poisonous weed guy too, that I can talk to, you know? So I think it's great to just, you know, try to accumulate people like that who are interested in those issues that are concerning to you, because if that's kind of their specialty, they enjoy sharing that information with others and will like, you know, your interest in the same issue.
Thanks for sharing your story. I think it's always helpful for our listeners to hear about how someone like yourself found their path and to share their story. So as we've talked about, the main purpose of this video podcast is to ask our guests to share something we call their one thing. In other words, we want them to tell us about one thing that they think new and beginning farmers really need to know, keep in mind, be thinking about, or doing as they're in the beginning stages and getting ready to take on their own challenge of starting an agriculture operation. I know that you've had some thoughts to share with us and our audience about ag entrepreneurs about your advice. If you want to be in agriculture, make that commitment to yourself. Don't be afraid to do things in an unconventional way, taking advantage of opportunities that become available or that you can dream up and create. You don't need to do things the same as people have done before you. Define your own niche, your own way. So, Kat, please tell us about the one thing that you want to share with our new and beginning audience today.
I really do think that you need to make the commitment to yourself that you want to be in agriculture. And when you do that, you're enabling yourself to do what you love. And for some people, it can be starting really small and building it into something else that they're comfortable with, or staying small. And the thing is that once you've made the commitment that you're going to be involved in agriculture, you're going to have good days and bad days, and you're going to have terrible years, but if you can stick to it, then you'll have some really great years as well. And so I think that if you want to be involved in ag, and if you make that commitment to yourself, you can make it happen, but it may not be what you end up doing in ag, may not be what you envision as you start. You know, you want to have this big farm or something, and that might not be where you end up. And that's probably not a bad thing, because you're going to get in and you're going to get experience, and you're going to find what you enjoy and what you can do with your resources, and go from there. And I think that there's a lot of innovation that goes on in agriculture, and it's done one person and one idea at a time. So I think it's really important to just make that commitment to yourself, to enable yourself to be an ag. You know, the day you decide that you're an ag producer, you're an ag producer.
So your operation has two distinct but very interrelated enterprises. How do you allocate resources and time between the enterprises? And I'm speaking from past experience too, that's probably one thing that's really hard to do in an operation.
It is. It's somewhat chaotic, but you know, I guess I have the support of my family that I try to let them know what my schedule is, and I try to be aware of my schedule for my writing and everything and speaking or whatever, travel to participate in ag topics. And I try to really carefully schedule that as much as I can. But you know, my family enables me, because when I'm not here, I have to have someone else doing my work for me. But the good thing is that because I'm a writer, I get inspiration from the beautiful things that I see every day being involved in agriculture in Wyoming. And so for the most part, that is what I write about, are from those experiences that I have. So in a way, you could say that the writing is just a supplemental outcome of the ag operation in the first place. So
how about ideas for weathering those down years especially when you just getting started? Those can be real showstoppers. What approaches have worked for you and your operation, or that you've seen in neighbors and mentors as well?
You know, that's probably one of the toughest things is when you have a bad year, and it doesn't matter what's causing the bad year, whether it's weather, predator event, market falls. You know, we had a really bad year a couple of years, actually it's been about 6 years ago, but where we were hit by predators really, really hard. It was just devastating economically. And I started to feel pretty darn miserable. And it's like, how can I continue to do this? And how can we financially continue to do this? And we honestly, I talked to a couple of older producers, and then they talked to me about their bad years that they had that nearly wiped them out. And just the fact that they had the gumption and the luck to have survived that and were there to talk to me about my situation was a pretty good inspiration. And they said, you know, if you can just hold on, you are an ag operator, you can get through this. And they were right. But you kind of have to do a mental check on yourself, I think, with that when it's a really bad year, because, you know, you could let it be the end of your operation. But I think part of that recovery from a devastating year like that is a mental recovery, that you will get through this. You will figure it out. And to to have other people that you can talk to that have experienced the same thing, and are then thriving is a pretty good inspiration.
You mentioned transhumance, and where have you seen it in practice? How could it be adapted to the Intermountain West? And I was fascinated because I had to look it up in the dictionary, actually, but it made perfect sense.
I have seen transhumans all over. So I've seen it in Mongolia, and all that it is the seasonal movement of people with their livestock, right? And so actually we already practice this in the West, but people don't recognize that we're doing the same thing that is being done by the Maasai in Africa, people all over the place that migrate with the seasons. And so, here in Western Wyoming, a lot of domestic sheep flocks winter down on the wind-blown lower elevation red desert country near the Colorado-Wyoming border. In the springtime, those sheep will start trailing north towards the mountains. They'll enter the mountains usually by July. For as the snow recedes in the mountains, then the sheep and cattle will graze those mountains, and then by the time the snow starts flying September, October, everything is shifting back down again. And so it's the cowboys and the herders and the livestock tenders that who are with the animals as they go, along with their livestock guardian dogs, along with their cow dogs that they're using for herding. And so it's a very natural system that has really been used all over the world, and we are still doing it. We are not, we're not the completely nomadic people like there are in some areas of the world. In some desert regions of the world, people don't have permanent homes, and they are completely nomadic. But so what we're doing is a version of that here, and we've been doing it for 125 years anyway here in Western Wyoming. And if you look at it, it's really great because it's a natural system of agriculture, of food and fiber production. And if you look, we are using the same migration rail trails and paths and even seasons as a lot of our wildlife species do. The antelope and the mule deer do the same thing. They move with the seasons for grazing. And so it's mimicking nature with our livestock herds. So I love that, and I'm trying to promote more of a recognition of that is indeed what we're doing, and that humanity has been doing it for thousands of years.
Well, Kat, thanks a lot for talking with us today. We appreciate your taking the time to share your insights and experiences for the benefit of new and beginning farmers. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
That will do it for this episode of You Can Farm Talks. Thanks to those of you who took the time to join this live discussion and submit questions. The recording of this episode and all our previous episodes will be posted and archived on our website and on our YouTube page. This is the last of this year's interviews. If you haven't seen previous episodes, please do review them. If you have any more questions, or if you're watching any recorded episode, please feel free to send questions via email, or even better, by adding them to the online discussion forum. We will respond to as many questions as we can and share the answers online. Stay tuned for information about the next steps for the You Can Farm Talks conversation. Check back on our YouTube You Can Farm website and Facebook page. Funding for this program has been provided by the USDA NEFA BFRDP program. We'd also like to thank Custom Ag Solutions, Right Risk, and especially our partners at University of Wyoming Extension. And we'd especially like to thank Kat Urbekite for joining us tonight. Thanks for listening to You Can Farm Talks.